What we had been talking about was, the separation between the Research Bureau and the field people. And I was trying to get...
You see, we were a small bureau, and individuals who would be at the head of types of work would have a good deal of responsibility and leeway for planning and all. Of course, they would have discretion enough to discuss with others the things, points that come up, that where there would be questions that they wanted to help resolve or something, or advice.
At what point did Mary Hilton come in and the structure changed?
I can't tell you the detail. I really just don't remember the date.
I can check.
But it was.
Well, see, she first started at the Bureau, I think she told me, in 1950, and then, I can't recall, it seems to me she was there from 1950 to 1955 and then came back again.
Was she away for a while? Well, it probably was in 1950 then, because it was after the war, and I think it probably was just around that time.
Oh. Well, that relates to another question I had, which is how the Bureau changed over the years from, say, when you first came in 1928. I have a sense, and from what you said before, too, and in seeing just whatever records there are at the archive that I've looked at, that there was a certain kind of informality in the earlier days.
Oh, in the very early days, there must have been, because it was a small Bureau and it just began gradually coming, growing, and there was even, I guess, by the time I came, which was 8 years or so after it had been organized, you see, there was a good deal of informality, and there were, I don't know that we even, I guess we call them, whether they call them divisions, or there was definitely the statistical and the editorial.
Mm-hmm.
And and there was no research then, but they had individual studies, and then the field people made the field studies, and so it was not as it was still very much smaller at the beginning, at the very beginning especially.
What was the relationship like between the staff people and Miss Anderson when you first came?
Well, it was all so small, you see. It was quite rather on more or less of an individual basis. Or we would always have our conferences of the group conferences, and there would be the head of the editorial division, and probably I would go too, and then the head of and Miss Anderson, of course, and any of the field people, any of the field directors, not the assistants, people that were assisting in the studies. And I don't think there was a separate, I don't remember that there was, I think there was a separate person for publicity probably. And that would be all probably.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just, that five or six little group would get together and discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Not on a regular basis, but when some special question was to be discussed. And that was all quite informal.
Mm-hmm.
And then individuals would have their responsibility to go ahead with whatever they were going to do.
Things that Ethel talked about was the fact that, I guess largely because of the job of the field workers, that many of their friends were the other women who worked at the Bureau, that really their social life kind of revolved
around
the
Bureau. Well, that's
true,
of course, because you see, people would be coming there to work from outside of Washington, and that would be one basis of their friendship in the community.
Now, was that true of the people like yourself who were right in Washington all the time?
Well, we had both, of course.
Mm-hmm. But where were most of your own friends from in your social circle?
Well, I guess they were from my church friends from meeting, and then I also had cousins in Washington.
So you weren't as close to the other women in the Bureau as perhaps some of the others were?
Well, to a few of them I would be, but not necessarily to all of them.
Mm.
I don't think I saw, most of them I wouldn't see outside of the office, excepting the very few who were more of my special friends.
Mm. Did that seem to be true of, were there very close relationships among the women who worked in the Bureau?
Oh, yes,
generally?
Because it was so small, you see, mm-hmm. that there were. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the person who was at the head of the office who kept the records of the people, I guess salary records and attendance records or whatever of that kind, the head of that was also, and she was a very close friend too of the other people in the Bureau. And we'd see each other from on the outside. Sometimes Miss Anderson would ask a few of us in for the evening, or some of the others would, or something like that, if there was some special thing. Miss Anderson, I remember being at Miss Anderson sometimes the night when they'd have the fireworks in Washington, because where she was staying, you could sit out, you could get out on the balcony and overlook the fireworks, and sometimes we'd be there, or she would, when she got a new TV set, she'd ask us to come in and listen to the TV or something like that. Mm.
So that there wasn't much of a...
There was much of a friendship relationship between many of the Bureau people.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that informal kind of structure over the years changed while you were there?
Well, of course, as anything grows larger and larger, gradually it becomes and is a little bit better organized, too. For example, when you have the separate divisions blocked off more, when the research division was formed, they had not had one. It just had a person who was conducting this big study of effects of labor legislation on woman employment. Would be one of the head, she would be in charge of her work and so forth.
Now, what about when Freda Miller came after Miss Anderson left? How did the Bureau change, and how did the relationships among the people change at that point?
Well, of course, it was pretty good sized by the time she came, you see. Well, yes, we had divisions with the head of the division, and then, of course, she would call on individual ones in the or individual division or for on the group for some special thing for discussion or for telling us what policy she would like to have followed and so forth.
Did the atmosphere seem to change at all in terms of the how
well,
decisions were made?
Of course, everybody was so devoted to Miss Anderson that nobody could take her place, really. I don't think there was ever the devotion to Miss Miller that there was to Miss Anderson from her long background and long experience in the Bureau. But we had been in touch with Miss Miller before, since she was the head of a women's bureau in the state. And we knew her. Some of us had been in the group meetings, perhaps, where she would be one of the people, so that we knew something about her work, and we had the respect for her work that she had done in the state. And she was perhaps rather more flyaway than Miss Anderson was, not as solidly grounded in some respects, and yet very imaginative too, and very desirous of working with the people in the. Of course, the head of a bureau that is sort of looked on askance a little bit in an agency like a department would be anxious to keep in touch with the heads of the department for the benefit of her own bureau. Mm. So that feature was always a difficulty for the person who was in that position. Mm. She had to hold her own over those in very big bureaus, but the people in the Bureau of Labor Statistics, there were one or two of the different heads of that were very, very helpful to the and understanding of the Women's Bureau, so that we had great help from some of them in policy.
Were there differences in just the style of their leadership between Miss Anderson and Miss Miller?
Oh, well, I guess there were, because there were great differences in personality. Mm-hmm. And naturally that makes some difference in style. But I don't know that I could analyze it exactly or put my finger on this or that, really. but there are bound to be differences in personalities.
Because one of the things that I noticed in the archives, in the files, what little there was were from the early period, is you have I came across very few written memos or directives from Miss Anderson to the staff. And
well,
then
she'd talk with them, you mm-hmm. see, personally.
So it became much more formalized, in other words.
Had to, as you had a larger staff.
Mm-hmm. Was it with the war that the big increase in the staff took place?
It was rather gradual, I think. I think it gradually developed. I don't remember at what stage the minimum wage division developed separately.
Mm.
That would have been a point of development. In fact, that was the only other division that developed as a division. Excepting the publicity division grew a little
mm-hmm.
too. But that was there before. I mean, there was one person that handled publicity, and then they began having an assistant, you so see. And then, of course, in 1930, the research, I think the publicity developed a little after that, and then the minimum wage developed quite a little after that.
Mm. What kind of changes do you think you saw in the Bureau in terms of its the whole question of advocacy for women? Do you think over the years there was a change in the tone of the kinds of work that was done and in the nature of the research?
Well, we had more and more effort put on certain of the lower categories of women's employment, you see, where there was more pressure and less opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as the Women Bureau had started to develop the benefits for employed women, it was looking toward the least the women that had the least opportunity,
mm-hmm.
so that there was a little later, more attention paid to the problems, the double problems of employed women as between home and employment, home duties and employment duties, and to the status of domestic service,
mm-hmm.
and also hotels and restaurants. Those were among the groups that were where women were less. Had become less organized and less accepted. And then, of course, there was the discriminations in apprenticeship for women.
Mm-hmm.
That we never did make a study of that particularly, but those were some of the things that came more to the fore later that hadn't been quite as prominent in the beginning when you were trying to get some development towards shorter hours and
mm-hmm.
a better minimum wage and so forth in the earlier times.
So the focus shifted somewhat to include women in the white collar and more professional
groups. Oh yes, very
groups
much so.
Then,
very much so.
From the
very much so. That developed very strongly as time went on, and we had a whole area where there was a study of occupational opportunities for women, like in the medical services
mm-hmm.
and so
mm-hmm.
forth. That developed very much more after the war.
Mm-hmm. Well, was the feeling that the women in the lower paid occupations were now becoming more organized and there was less need to continue that?
No,
or was
no,
the
that
other
continued.
Just added?
It was just added.
I see.
Oh, no, it was just added.
Mm-hmm.
The other was not dropped at all. It
mm-hmm.
was just as intensive then as it had been, more so.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel that there
the
was...
The first concentration was more on the industrial woman.
Right.
And then... then there was more attention paid to household employment and
mm-hmm.
some of the service industries, and then to the professional, but they all went on. The others were not shortened.
Mm-hmm.
It's just further development.
I wondered if it reflected at all a change in the kind of basic social reform ideas of the women involved in the Bureau, where the earlier ones really were
I don't think the women involved in the Bureau were so much interested in outside things as they were in the specific things they were concentrating mm-hmm. on in their job.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't generalized to women's situation.
Well, there was some of that, of mm-hmm. course, especially among the among the heads of divisions and all, mm-hmm. they saw that too. Mm-hmm. But the ones working under them were working on specific problems more as they came up.
We talked before about the impossibility because of federal laws about being involved in the political work. Did many of the women in the Bureau, though, belong to outside women's organizations? Did their commitment to women extend beyond the...
It's quite... some of the head women did, yes. They mm-hmm. belonged to a business professional women's club, some of them. I don't know whether any belonged to League of Women Voters. Miss Anderson may have.
What sort of... Did you belong to any women's groups?
Well, I didn't really have time for them, mm-hmm. for much else beside the work in the Bureau. And I had done so much work in women's groups, and I found that it was so demanding mm-hmm. and took so much of your time and energy that I couldn't split my time and energy up too much with other women's groups. Mm-hmm. And also, I needed a little bit of outside recreation. Mm-hmm. So I did belong to a women's groups that were dealing more with, I didn't even belong to the AAUW. I had belonged to the AAUW. Mm-hmm. But they always had their teas at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was too tired, and I couldn't. So I didn't affiliate again with the ANUW until after I retired. Mm-hmm. And that was a matter of timing more than anything.
Mm-hmm. What, looking back, what do you feel were the major research studies that were done? In your division in the
well,
e-design?
Of course, the big one of effective labor legislation on women, that early one, that was before I came, though. Mm-hmm. And I thought, after I was there, you mean? Mm-hmm. Well, I think that women in the United States, mm-hmm. although it's out of date now, would be out of date soon in a few years after it was done. And then also this one that's called Documents of... Women's work in international organizations or something like mm-hmm. that's not the exact name. That was really a historic thing. Not a big study in one way. Not a study that was a research, pure research study. It wasn't anything that required field. And then, I'm not talking about the field studies mm-hmm. now.
Right.
Because some of the field studies were very important. There was a group. Study of the telephone industry that was very important. And we had quite a time with that because our recommendations wouldn't have been the kind of recommendations that the employers would have liked. And we didn't want to be too extreme, you see, so we were between the devil and the deep blue sea on that one.
Did that happen very often where you had to be really cautious in your recommendations?
No, I didn't think that happened too often because we were pretty outspoken most of the time. And then the women's... Women and Their Dependents mm-hmm. was quite a study. That was pure...
In 38 or so, that large study.
I don't remember the date, mm-hmm. yeah, but it was a later study, mm-hmm. not one of the earlier ones. And then, of course, the studies of legislation for women, state legislation, the summaries of state legislation, that was a big work all through the years, all the time, mm-hmm. being kept up. Mm-hmm. And it was done... by people who were in touch with the legal situation in the states. Florence Smith was the prime one who developed that in the first place, and then it was carried on. And later it was put into the minimum wage division, you see. But that was always a very important part of our work all through the years. And then another important part of our work all through the years was the analysis of census materials from period to period. Mm-hmm. And finally that big study of women over seven mm-hmm. decades, that was a very important one. Mm-hmm. Those were among some of the more important ones.
Did you feel, or looking back now, do you feel Were you able to see the effects of any of your research in terms of helping to bring about changes in women's situation?
Well, that's a very difficult thing to pinpoint, but I think there's no doubt that what a lot of the information that was provided in many of those, especially in some of those state legal studies, had effect in the states, because they formed background information for the women who were working on that in the states.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there was a great deal of effect from that, from mm-hmm. those things.
But there aren't, it's kind of a vague feeling. There are no definite, you can't there, see it, definite
well,
correlations.
Well, I don't know personally a definite pinpointing, but there may be,
mm-hmm.
there might be a good deal of that, more than has ever been caught up with, you know.
But in terms of your own feelings, of course, you do feel that the Bureau did contribute
oh, yes,
a great deal
oh, yes.
to those changes.
And then some of the information that we helped to give, we're giving all the time
mm-hmm.
to women's organizations, like women's clubs and business and professional women's groups and all, were very helpful to them in the background work of their work in their localities. And that we had much demand for all through the time. Another thing that we had, which is was very important in the informational field, was the handbook for women workers.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an earlier one, which was, I don't know what it was called, Papers on the Work of Women or something like that. And it was issued in 1931, 1935, 1938. And that gave a lot of background material for women's organizations, and also helped us in this daily river of requests that we would have to pinpoint information that we could quickly help with.
Mm.
And then that was followed later, beginning around 1948, by a handbook for women workers, which was a biennial publication and went on for a number of years. I did that for about 10 years, which would be five different issues of it, you see, beginning in 1948. I was the one who developed that to begin with.
Now,
I think Miss Miller wanted that. Miss Miller was very anxious to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I undertook it and did it the first time, and then made it as a biennial. Mm-hmm. And they've kept on with some of that.
Mm-hmm. When she, something occurred to me as you were mentioning that, when she came, did the, how research projects were decided upon, did that change when she came?
I don't think so.
Or was it still basically the same process that you described earlier?
I think it was basically the same process. It almost had to be. If there was a demand for a certain kind of information, now maybe she would get, or Miss Anderson would get, special requests from women's groups for a certain kind of thing, and they'd become so pressing that we realized that
mm-hmm.
that was something that was badly needed and we didn't have the information
mm-hmm.
on, you see. And it would develop more of itself to some extent.
So it appears like there was
through requests,
this...
Through requests.
It appears like there was this constant flow back and forth between
yes.
the women's organizations who
yes,
needed
it
the information, and then the Bureau
yes,
would develop
was.
It, and then they
yes,
would be
was.
Able to use it
yes,
in their
it
localities.
Was. Of course, we couldn't always do all the things at rest in detail, and all those things were very slow things to develop. It took time to work them out. And sometimes if you want something, you want it so quickly, you're very perturbed if people don't bring it right up to you immediately when it isn't there,
mm-hmm.
you see, until it has to be compiled.
Did the nature of the women's organizations that the Bureau related to change? What I mean by that is when we talked earlier about in the early days when so much of the work, and it seems like much of the relationship was with groups from industry and lower wage scales.
Well, that's
and
where
over
it started,
the years,
of course.
So that I imagine in the beginning there weren't as many connections with some of the basically middle class.
Well, of course,
groups.
After all, the business and professional women's group didn't start till fairly late,
mm-hmm.
and of course, after that started, there was much more demand then for the other type of thing. And also, I suppose there was some development in the women's club groups, you
mm-hmm.
see, which were not too socially interested at one stage and became more and more so, mm-hmm. and especially after woman suffrage right. came in, mm-hmm. so that, that would be a normal development. Mm-hmm. And then later on, the special development of study of opening of occupations for women in the higher levels. So that there may have been some sort of a progression that went on with changes in society mm-hmm. and changes in women's groups. Yes.
Did you feel over the years that the work of the Bureau became any less valuable than it had been in the early days?
More so.
Mm-hmm.
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. And up until that was true up until the time.
Now I don't know. Mary Hilton would give you a line on that too. You've talked with her, of course.
Well, all just in very short meetings that we've had, you know, 20 minutes, half hour together.
Yes.
She's always so busy. I'd love to interview her. Get someone to interview her. But in terms of
she's had now a very long experience mm-hmm. too. And you can say that the overlapping of my experience and hers would give you a good range.
Mm.
And, of course, Ethel Erickson was there. I think she was there a couple of years maybe before I was mm-hmm. before I came.
Now, all during your once you came to the Bureau in 28, you lived right in the D.C. area?
I had an apartment there. Mm-hmm. And I had an apartment there. And Ethel, of course, went out to the field. And so after I came... She came and lived with me.
Oh.
She came and lived in my apartment when she was in from the field, which made it very nice for me and pleasant. And it was kind of her home there in my apartment for several years until her work changed and wasn't so much in the field, and then she got a living place for an apartment mm-hmm. of her own. So we had very enjoyable times together in that way. I always looked forward to her coming in for a while, but she could never stay very long because her work was field job. Mm.
It sounds like it was very difficult traveling around
yes,
so much
yes,
and being so isolated.
But she's the kind of person I think enjoyed it in a way. She's quick on the up, picking up ideas, mm-hmm. you know, and she knew so well how to approach people, mm-hmm. and she was an excellent field person.
Generally, were the what were the relations like between the studies designed by the field workers in the statistical division and the research division? Do you recall any incidents of real conflict between the divisions?
Well, I don't think so. I think we were very cooperative
mm-hmm.
in every way. Of course, the field and the research required quite different approaches, and the field never knew the internal workings of the research nor the research of the field situation would, the requirements were so different.
Mm-hmm.
But when the field people came in, of course, we were always interested to hear their reports. And of course, they became a little bit disturbed when research was a little slower than they thought they'd like to have it. And they, of course, depended on the statistical division to organize their material and mm-hmm. on us to write it. And we depended on them for advice at points in the writing, you see,
mm-hmm.
for going through with their material to see whether we were giving it, we depended on them for the angle they wanted stressed, you see, when we were writing it.
Where did the model come from, do you know, of having the divisions like that, of having the statistical division separate and the field division separate and the research?
Well,
was
it
that
just,
from any
it,
other
it
agency?
It just grew up as time went on and the requirements of the work demanded it, you
mm-hmm.
see. You see, there was no research division to begin with. There was just the statistical, because they had to have the material organized.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the editorial all through the time,
mm-hmm.
too. And so when the field people brought the material in, the research people, statistical people had to organize it, and then the editorial people had to write it. And it was just a natural developments, you see, from the type of work.
Because I guess the problem that I have with the that model is that in my own research training, I always think of research being the sort of more general category, which would include field work and work with documents
Well, it is, of course.
And it just seems so peculiar to me to have these be three parallel structures rather than all together, and research being the overriding.
Well, of course, it's all research.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a name.
Yeah. But in this case, it seemed like the research
was... But the research was not confined to bookish material mm-hmm. at all. It also included original material from questionnaires and mm-hmm. that type of thing. But it is, in a way, it's a unit, and yet it divides the work in categories that can be reasonably handled. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the qualifications of the people differed considerably, too.
What were the backgrounds of the people who assisted you in research?
Well, of course, for all of our people, we got them through federal questionnaires and so forth, and if we needed a new person, we'd go over the candidates and see whose experience had been good. That looked as if it would devote to that type of work.
Mm-hmm.
It's a qualification of the individual might differ somewhat if they were very careful in the research, in their line of in their judgment as to the materials that they were going through with, and the field people as to their approach to the factory management and so on mm-hmm. and so forth. It's a different type of qualification, you mm-hmm. might say, for those types of work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the editorial people had to have some knowledge of writing,
mm-hmm.
and so did the research people, for that matter. And they had to have be able to evaluate material in its structure and mm-hmm. its applications.
Did the research people come from backgrounds in economics? Primarily?
Some of them did. some of them in both categories came from YWCA work.
Mm.
Though I never thought that the people who had been doing YWCA work were quite as good in research as some of those who had a little bit more academic background.
Mm-hmm. Was there ever...
And yet the academics, of course, can very easily have not sufficient appreciation of the practical
mm-hmm.
end. You've got a fine balance there.
Right. That's what I think was one of the things so interesting about the Bureau in those early days, that the background, Ms. Anderson's background,
yes.
had been in industry, and then these other people who came in from academic
entirely
backgrounds.
Different, yes. Mm.
Did that ever create any feelings
No, because she was such a no, because she was such a great personality, mm-hmm. you see. And, of course, she didn't want too much time taken in too much detail, either. And that was a very good influence on people that were likely to go into too much rather fruitless detail.
Mm-hmm.
So you got... And, of course, she was very appreciative of the field people's work in the field and contacts in the field. And what the experience that they found there, she was very knowledgeable about that.
Did you ever get a sense of her feeling inadequate because she did not have any sort of academic background?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so because her focus was so different and so enlarged, mm-hmm. you might say.
Mm-hmm.
But she was. I think she had a realization of dependence on people who could do that type
mm-hmm.
of work, but she didn't feel that everybody had to do the same type of work.
And then after you retired, did you continue any of the work at all
no,
or any
no,
connection
no, no,
with
no.
the Bureau?
I was so anxious to get out of it. I'd had years and years and years, and I'd had enough of it. I wanted to do some things on my own.
Mm-hmm.
I had other interests that I wanted to go on with, that I wanted to develop. Then I was with the... Then I went with AUW, and we had a lovely poetry group and all that sort of thing you wouldn't have had time for.
Mm.
And I just was so glad to get out of it.
after a long life of working.
And, of course, I felt the same way about the other agencies that I had been in. When I was with the university, I had... done so much traveling around to all different parts of the state and to meeting with club groups and school groups and political groups and so many. There was just no let up, you know. And I was just tired of people.
Mm.
And so I was very glad to go into something that was research now. I can really pin down to something.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's a different type, entirely different type of thing. And before that, too, I'd been in the suffrage work where I'd been traveling and with many contacts and that type of thing. So I was very eager to go into something that was all in one place that I could get your teeth into, you might say. And by the time I had gone through with years and years of that, I was very anxious to get out to something that would be more leisurely. So it worked out pretty well in that way. There are these books now that talk about transitions in life, mm-hmm. you know, and so on and so forth. And the transitions seem to come in quite a natural way. The very first thing I did after I retired was to drive down around the basin and the river, along the river, you know, and just take a book and just go and sit and enjoy the river and read a little while and look at the scenery and so forth, and just spend a free afternoon when I didn't have to do anything.
Well, after what? A work career of some 50, almost 40-some years.
Oh, yeah, at least 50, 19, what is it? Well, if you go back to the school period, mm-hmm. teaching period, 1913 to 56, 23, 33, 43, 53, 40 years. Yes.
You needed a break.
But different types of work.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, breaks like the year that I went to Europe, you mm-hmm. see. That year I had, I went with the idea of going to the Fédération Internationale Universitaire
mm.
school for 6 weeks. In August and September, and then I went with a group of friends who were going to the International Education Association, and of course at the university I belonged to the NEA, and a friend of mine was a principal of a high school, of a elementary school in Richmond, and she had been in London before, and she was taking this party, and so I just joined them. There were six of us, and we went to Edinburgh to the International Education Association meeting, and she was the president that year of the NEA, national mm. president of the NEA, and she had me appointed as an associate delegate to the NEA, to the international. And then I found out on the boat going over, I met with a friend from Swarthmore who was a professor there, and he was going to the New Education Fellowship meeting in Heidelberg, which was also a week. And so we were going on to take a post-convention trip to France, and I don't know where else. So we went to Paris, and I left them in Paris and went on to Heidelberg and went to attended this week of the New Education Fellowship in Heidelberg. And then I went down to Florence, went to Lucerne and Florence, and then I left them entirely in Paris, and I went to Heidelberg, and then I went to Lucerne and Florence, and then came back to Geneva for the school there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a real break that year.
So you would take a whole year break then?
No, this was from June to the middle of September.
Uh-huh.
It was the summer quarter.
I see. So it sounds like, since Ethel mentioned taking breaks, going on trips to Europe too, that this was a fairly common pattern among many of you.
Well, you'd have to. You're so intensive in the work, you see.
Mm.
It's like a sabbatical year,
mm-hmm.
although it has to be differently organized, not sabbatical necessarily, not every 7 years. And then the other one was when I went to the University of Chicago, which
mm-hmm.
was just as hard work, but very different.
Mm-hmm.
And both of those things were things that I thought were developing things
mm-hmm.
for the future work to come.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly thought that this knowledge of an international association, also I went to the International Labor Organization offices and found their material and learned something about them too. was be a help in my university work. And as it turned out, it was helpful in the Women's Bureau too, for that matter. And then also the other break at the University of Chicago would be a help in my line of work. If I went on with teaching or whatever I did.
Did you ever regret not continuing with teaching or getting your doctorate?
There wasn't any question about it. The only offers I had for jobs were administrative jobs, and I certainly didn't want to be a dean of women because the dean of women is just simply under the thumb of the men and has to do what the policy of the men says for the women, which they don't approve of necessarily. Mm-hmm. And I had acquaintanceship with a number of deans of women, and I knew that situation very well. I mean, when I was at the university, I found out that from the organization, you see, of the deans in the NEA.
So it seems as if, in a sense, because the Women's Bureau was all women, that you were able to have much more freedom in the kinds of work you did and be more autonomous.
Well, that may have been true along that line, but if I had, for example, been in the Bureau of Labor Statistics and been very interested in labor conditions and all of that sort of thing all along the line, which I was more or less, that work would not have been too dissimilar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I was very glad that I was right where I was. I had been interested. I had not known much about the Women's Bureau. I had known more about the Children's Bureau, and that was really where I was interviewed for the Children's Bureau. But at the time, what they wanted was a person with legal training. And I had carefully avoided legal things because it ties you up in technical knots, and I wouldn't have it. And so I had not had the legal experience, and they specifically wanted a person to handle the legal angle of their work. And so it was, well, it was the same examination. I mean, I guess she had found that examination had been sent to them, probably, and Miss Abbott had interviewed me about it. And it wasn't really what I wanted, but the Children's Bureau was a much larger bureau and better known.
Mm-hmm.
And I had known of the Children's Bureau, and I had not known of the Women's Bureau very much about the Women's Bureau. Mm-hmm. But I was very glad that it worked out that way.
Well, it sounds like it was a really fruitful career in terms of, I mean, when I look at those reports, some of which, I mean, I know women scholars, particularly historians today, who really use those reports, those bulletins and things you've written a great deal.
They use them now,
do they? Oh, absolutely.
Well, some of them, of course, are quite out of date.
But many of them, when you're doing research on the particular period,
are
just terribly
helpful. Well, another thing, they give the background and the type of information,
right,
which can be followed on to more recent times.
I've used a lot of the Bureau material from the 20s. Since most of my work had until recently focused on the 20s, I know several people, though. You see the references to the Bureau work, more and more women in the work women historians are now doing.
Well, and now, of course, as time goes on and as the society changes, the work of an organization will change to fit the needs of this changing society. That was the thing about the University of Virginia, you see, in putting in this a Bureau of Citizenship Education, just at the time when women were enfranchised and there was a tremendous demand for knowledge about current affairs. Mm-hmm. And I organized the branch of the AAUW at the University of Virginia, too, because, of course, women hadn't been there before. Mm-hmm. And we had a beginning branch then of the AAUW. I guess it's still going now.
Is there anything else you'd like to add that you could think of that we didn't cover?
Well, it's all up to you, you know, what type of thing you want to know about. But I do think that those two or three things are important. The study of women in the United States, the study of, which is called Documents of Women in International Agencies or something like that. It shouldn't be documents. It does have documents in it, but it has much more.
Mm-hmm.
And then that series, first of papers about women's work, I forget the exact name, which was done for three times, and then the beginning of the of the Handbook on Women mm-hmm. Workers, which was biennial.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things that go through the period that I was there, at mm-hmm. least. And of course, earlier than that, the big study of effective labor legislation mm-hmm. on women, and then the big national study in 1907 mm-hmm. of women and child yeah. wage earners.